Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
We're back. It's 12 after. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, 800-531-3815. Toll free coast to coast. Matthew Cartwright is our guest. Matthew's an attorney, but we love him anyway. He's a partner with Munley and Cartwright out of Scranton, Pennsylvania. He's our friend. Matthew, welcome back.
Thanks, Jim, and we don't hold anything against talk show hosts.
Or used car salesman either, right? Would you buy a car from this talk show host? I don't think so.
I'd buy it from you, Jim.
Matthew, one of the things I know you want to talk about today is working small business owners working with our banks. And this is an interesting angle that you want to discuss. And I have my own way of looking at this, and it's from a preventive standpoint, but your perspective today is a little bit from the postmortem standpoint. And why don't you tell us what you got on your mind?
It's funny you say that, because when I get into these cases, that's the term I use. It's the postmortem of a business. I'm really one of the last people your listeners ever want to meet. I'm a trial lawyer. If I'm not suing you, you have to hire me because you're in horrible circumstances to sue somebody else. One of the things that I do for small businesses is I do what we call kill the company cases. And there are a lot of different ways a company can fall into the pratfall that'll end up in the death of the company. And then we get into the postmortem lawsuit. But one of them is lender liability, the liability of a big lending institution that may be at fault for a company's demise. And I've been doing lender liability cases for a number of years now, and I think it's probably something I can enlighten some of your listeners with.
Well, yeah, I'd like for you to talk to us a little bit about that. And of course, what we'll do, folks, is as we go through this, I want to approach this from both standpoints, not only from the standpoint of you know, what happens in the postmortem aspect of a business once it's died, but also what can we do to make sure that you don't get yourself into that position.
That's right.
So which one you want to go with first, the preventive or the postmortem?
Well, let's look at the broader picture first. You look for your listeners don't want to hear about one particular case. You want to look for patterns and trends. And one thing that I would say, cases against banks have several common features. And the one you start with is that they are often as a result of the merger or takeover of a bank, mm-hmm. where a new management philosophy comes into an area. Oftentimes, you're dealing with a local community bank. You're dealing with the commercial loan officer. You have a relationship of trust and confidence in the person. The person is active in your local community. You like the person. And one of the things you like about the person is that you can do business with him or her on a handshake.
Well, and I know you mean that to some degree. You mean that literally, and some degrees metaphorically, because the point is obviously the everything has to be contractual and nailed down. You don't get money without signing a note. But there are a lot of things that are sort of understood between the two of you, aren't you? It's almost like that loan officer is your partner.
Yeah, it that's right, and you got the nail right on the head, Jim. You can never write down everything that the parties intended in a deal. For example, the loan officer may know the company and may know its needs and has dealt with the company for 15 years and will realize that 3 weeks after the closing, they're going to have to be talking about different plans for other financing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's understood that they're going to be having that meeting, and they're going to be sitting down over coffee a few weeks after the closing on this loan.
Well, let me give you another scenario. You walk into your bank's office, and you say, John, you know about so-and-so company across town. I have an opportunity to buy them out, and that'll diminish one of the competitors in this market for what we do. But I'm going to need about $75,000 to make the transaction happen, but I'm not ready to get the money right now. I've got to finish some due diligence. And the banker says, sure, when you need it, come back and get it. And there's nothing written down. It's just, as you say, as you said a minute ago, Matthew, it's something that they say to you, that they commit to you, so to speak, and you go try to make the deal. Well, in the meantime, it takes you an extra 2 months longer to make this thing happen. And during that period of time, big bank buys out little bank.
Right. That's the second shoe dropping. You start off with the situation of two people knowing each other very well and anticipating each other's needs. And all of a sudden, into that mix comes a huge bank. You know, they say the riches are in the niches. And the big banks decide, well, they want to go after these, the local, the banking customers that are dealing with the local banks. They want to get into those niches and get those banking customers. Well, the problem is that they buy the local bank, but they want to get rid of the local bank's way of doing business. They want to get rid of all of the implied promises that are out there, all of the understandings.
And they move the approval process to the big city.
Well, that's right. And further away, suddenly you find out you're doing business 12 states away from your own state.
With a computer.
That's right.
Literally, because that's the computer does the credit scoring.
That's right. And the funny part is that the big banks don't realize that's what attracted the customer to the local bank in the first place. Handshake deals, personal attention, dealing with someone active in the local community. So, and often you have new management philosophy coming in, and it may be that they find they don't want to be lending money to the types of businesses that are the existing customers. That's when the trouble starts.
Mm-hmm.
That's when you have the big banks deciding to pull the financing on existing customers of the local banks that they just bought.
Now, when we come back after these next commercial messages, Matthew's going to talk to us about what to do if that happens to you, and to see if you have any recourse. But what I'm going to tell you right now is do what Jim Blassingame has been telling you for the last 5.5 years, and you won't get yourself, you'll be less likely to get yourself into this problem, and that is have more than one bank. How many times have you guys heard me say that? Make sure you got more than one bank, because if one bank lets you down, you can always go to the other one that you've already got a relationship with, and then you don't get your company into a problem where there actually is a postmortem situation. When we come back, Matthew's going to tell us what to do if you find yourself there. 20 after, stay with us. We'll be right back. We're back. It's 23 after. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. My website is www.jbsba.com. Matthew Cartwright is our guest. Matthew, you got a website?
I sure do. It's www.munley, MUNLEY.com.
All right. And you want to give us a phone number?
Sure. 800-346-7401.
All right. So check that out if you get a chance. If you'd like to know more about some of the things that Matthew's been talking about and that he's talked to us about on the show. One other thing I want to add on to what I said as we went to the break, Matthew, and then I wanted you to talk to us about the postmortem aspect that we promised our audience. And that is that I just want to say again what this large bank did in buying out the small bank, that's a good business transaction. It's good for the shareholders of that bank. It's good for the big bank. It's the way of the marketplace, and you're never going to hear me say that that's a bad thing. I do think that it's a bad thing if any community is left without an independent community bank. I think that's a bad thing. But what that means is if you don't have one, if there's not one now because the big bank swallowed them up, guess what? Go start one.
Right.
I mean that's, in fact, I'd love to find a community that has no independent community bank. We need, Matthew, you and me both need to go start one there. But the thing is, so that's a good thing, but that doesn't mean that their plans need to upset your plans. So don't put yourself into that position. Don't allow yourself to get trapped without a bank. But if you do, Matthew's now going to tell you what that could look like, and maybe you got some recourse. Go ahead, Matthew.
Well, that's right. It's the same old principle of diversification. Don't put all your eggs in one basket. Put all your lending eggs in one basket. You can set yourself up for trouble. Let me tell you a true story. We have a mobile home retail business. They realize they're dealing with buyers without much money. They're buying mobile homes. So they know they're going to sell more mobile homes if they can help their customers out with the financing on the homes. So they sell mobile homes partly on credit.
Mm-hmm.
Mobile home company takes a note from the customer, gets a down payment, and then takes payments from the customers. To do this, the mobile home retailer has to have bank financing for themselves, and the local bank provides this to them, getting a standard security interest. Things are going along fine. Mobile home company is breaking even, maybe making a little money. It's a bad month or two every so often. Then, first ginormous bank, change the name obviously, buys local bank and sees this mobile home business in the loan portfolio. First ginormous decides it doesn't like this kind of business, decides to pull the loan, pointing to a couple of bad months, invoking the quote, change in financial condition, unquote, clause,
mm-hmm.
you've seen those,
mm-hmm.
and claiming there wasn't enough evidence of collateral to protect the bank. Takes a judgment against mobile home company for $3 million, this actually happened, puts mobile home company out of business. It's a classic lender liability case, and the key to the case is that ginormous bank violated its duty of good faith and fair dealing when it used a couple of bad months as pretext.
Mm-hmm.
They just plain didn't want to be in that kind of business, and that's why they pulled the loan, but they used this change in financial condition clause as pretext to pull the loan and kill the company. Those are the kinds of cases that I find myself in.
Well, let me say this, folks. You'll never hear me encouraging people to be litigious. I think this country has become much too litigious, but I do believe that there needs to be people like Matthew Cartwright out there that bankers who decide to do what they did wake up and think, wait a minute, I don't think I want a visit from Matthew. Maybe we better back off a little bit. That's a good thing.
Well, what you see is, you see some patterns. They're all kill the company cases. They result in the company suing the bank for the loss of the whole net worth of the company.
Mm-hmm.
And to do that, you're showing loss of the reasonable profits that it would have made. They're interesting cases.
Let's not forget the fact that we also hurt customers. We also hurt employees. We also hurt vendors. We hurt the economy when we did that.
Right. The other thing is they start out the wrong way. They start out with the company being the defendant. It's the bank suing the company for the full amount of the outstanding loan.
Right.
And so it's a countersuit is what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
But the question is really, what is the theory? It's basically three broad areas. I'm not going to lecture you on the law today, but banks have an implied obligation of good faith and fair dealing, as everybody else does when they enter into a contract. And you have to use those principles of good faith when you fill in those unwritten parts of the deal. And there are unwritten parts of every deal.
Mm-hmm.
Or else you'd be dealing with a contract that looks like a government contract.
That's right.
And banks have to fulfill their promises, even verbal promises. A lot of people think, oh, that was only an oral promise, so it's not enforceable. Wrong. In most states, a verbal promise is enforceable.
Mm-hmm.
And banks have an obligation to tell the truth, like everybody else. You work from those principles, and from there you decide if you have a case.
Well, hopefully, Matthew, what we've done today is we've let people know a little bit more. Maybe they've become a little more aware of the elements of doing business with a bank, of not only the written down and signed elements, but also the verbal elements. Your verbal comments as well as the banker's verbal comments made us a little more aware of that. But also, hopefully, we've scared the bejeebers out of a few people into going and getting a second bank.
Get a second bank and a third bank.
Yeah.
Get things in writing as much as you can.
Matthew, good job today. Will you come back again?
You bet.
We need another dose of your legal advice here sometime. We'll get that real soon. Matthew Cartwright, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks, Matt. We'll see you later.
So long, Jim.
Quick break. Right back with Leslie Fine. We're going to talk to an educator in just a few minutes. 29 after, the show is brought to you by IBM and Office Depot.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.